Yo, what's going on? You're listening to 99.5 The Mix, where we always keep it live from the 305.
Yogami, a podcast from Miami about yoga and stuff. Okay, and welcome everyone to the fourth episode of Yogami, a podcast from Miami about yoga and stuff. And we're continuing on this journey. This is our fourth episode, as I mentioned. We're coming to you straight from Miami, or technically Miami Shores, on a classic Miami day, which means it's lovely outside, pure sun, which means it could rain at any moment.
And it already did.
Yes.
And I have frizzy hair.
About 100 degrees.
At least.
And 90% humidity. It's just paradise.
Yes.
So this is Vicente, and I'm here with Anna Margaret.
Hello.
And we're living up to our title of our podcast, Yoga and Stuff, by today focusing on yoga and Ayurveda.
Correct. Well pronounced.
Thank you. And boy, I tried.
At least you didn't say Ayurveda.
Uh-huh. Okay. I could do that.
Of course.
Just give me time.
So another disclaimer. We have so many disclaimers because yes. People that we love and are close to us are here. And today we have Thamer, who is not just a fantastic woman and mother and partner, but she is my cousin.
That's right.
Who I have looked up to since I was little. And here we are side by side, and if you could just give us like a little brief background. I said Thamer many times, and if I haven't, I will say it again. So Thamer is here.
I'm here. Okay. So I decided to take yoga in 2003 and become a yoga instructor. Mm-hmm. And sometime along 2004 or 2005, I was introduced to Ayurveda by Catherine Templeton. Mm-hmm. She gave us a little workshop just on the basics of Ayurveda, and it sparked my interest in science for the first time. I never thought that I would enjoy science, because I never did growing up in high school or in mm-hmm. elementary.
You didn't like dissecting frogs?
I did not like that.
Okay.
Even though I took it home and tried to assemble all the bones together, and then I cut the eye, and an eyeball popped out, and the frog went flying, and no more
Scarred
interest.
For life.
That yeah. was the end of her CSI.
Exactly.
Mom, about medical school.
No. So my interest was sparked by Catherine, and everything made sense to me, you know. Ayurveda is the science or the knowledge of life. That's what Ayurveda means. And it's the 5,000-year-old healing modality of the Vedic culture of India. So the rishis of India, who lived in forests and caves and basically were the first scientists that were practicing on themselves, you know, gathering the plants and mm-hmm. fruits and berries and barks and minerals, to and their wisdom also, their inspirational wisdom, they discovered the healing properties of these plants and minerals. So in learning about the Ayurvedic properties, my interest really sparked because it made sense. Mm-hmm. It's something that totally made sense. And in Ayurveda, the five elements exist everywhere on the planet, and in everything that we eat, in the atmosphere, it's air, ether, fire, water, and earth. Mm-hmm. And the combination of these create what is called the doshas, or the different constitutions in our bodies. We all look the same, but we're not all made the same. Mm-hmm. So the three doshas, which are the constitutions, are vata, pitta, and kapha. Vata is ether and air. Pitta is fire and water. Mm-hmm. And kapha is earth and water. And this is what, you know, makes our different constitutions.
So let me ask you something. Is someone just one thing, or are they a combination of things? How does that
basically
work?
The three doshas are in everyone.
Okay.
But there's usually one that's more prominent. Mm-hmm. For instance, vata dosha, ether and air. That constitution basically is either a very tall person or a very short person, very slim. They're more fidgety because they're governed by prana. So they're always on the go, because prana is movement. So they're always on the go. They're very nervous, hard to focus their mind. Mm-hmm. Maybe they speak really fast or walk really fast. That's basically the qualities or the gunas of vata dosha.
Okay.
I'm wondering, in this, in discussing these ideas, where do they come from, in the sense of, I understand there's this history to them, but one thing that struck me when I was, as I've been studying yoga, is as you get more and more into it, you discover that what people believe are thousands of years old are fairly contemporary, like some of the asana poses. And I'm wondering, when a person is learning these ideas, is there a sense of an unbroken tradition where people are introduced to a very extensive heritage, or is what people are likely to be exposed to in Ayurveda a blend of contemporary and more traditional ideas? Do you have a sense of that?
Well, basically, I think that it comes from a tradition, mm-hmm. and we can incorporate it in our daily life.
Uh-huh.
For example, in your basic asanas, there are some asanas that, for instance, raising up of the arms, you know, anything, the movement of the arms, mm-hmm. Brings more vata into your body. Mm-hmm. So if you are vata, or you're imbalanced in vata, mm-hmm. you don't want to do those poses, because then you'll get more out of balance. Mm-hmm. So for someone that has vata dosha or suffering from an imbalance in vata, we would recommend more grounding poses. Nothing with movement, not too much movement.
And by grounding, you mean something like a little more earthy or something?
More earthy, feet planted on the ground, mm-hmm. meditation, yoga nidra, mm-hmm. things like that.
Got it. So, you know, like some things, like when we started yoga, like light on yoga and all that, that's like a book that we went to when we did some of the poses. But for something like this, would you recommend that someone see a professional first and kind of get, and I'm doing air quotes here, diagnosed?
It's always good to go to a professional to ensure that what you are learning or wanting to do mm-hmm. is the correct thing to do.
Okay.
Because we might read something on the internet that mm-hmm. really doesn't apply to us. We might take a dosha test but forget mm-hmm. some of the things that are more important that a professional might see.
Mm-hmm. And also, we can't always see, because remember we did that for our teacher training, mm-hmm. Vince and all that stuff, and sometimes you can't see yourself as objectively as someone else can see you as well. So it I guess it's helpful. And also in Ayurveda, they take the pulse, they look at your tongue,
yes,
correct?
There are other different factors also that a consultant will do, and taking your pulse, reading your tongue, even reading the facial lines.
Mm.
Yeah, that as you walk through the door, a real professional can just look at you and know what is wrong with you.
Oh, I shouldn't do Botox then. I think my lines
no,
red.
Exactly.
Okay.
No.
Oh, there goes my Christmas. Okay.
So as you're describing these ideas, I'm wondering how this tradition is affiliated, or to what degree it's affiliated with something, and I know nothing about Chinese medicine, but something that somebody would say,
yes,
this is Chinese medicine, or I'm going to the Chinese herbalist.
Very much associated, exactly, because a traditional acupuncturist, mm-hmm. you just don't come in and they put needles in your body. Yeah. You sit down and have a consultation, which usually lasts about an hour and a half, because you not only go through with why you're there, like, I have stomach pains. Mm-hmm. And it's not like a Western doctor that will say, okay, here, take an antacid, blah, 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 go home, come back in 2 weeks. Ayurveda, as well as traditional Chinese medicine, they look into what has caused the pain in your stomach. Are you anxious? Do you have problems at home or something at work that's making you anxious, that's making you your chi just stop and be stagnant? So in Ayurveda, it's the same. They want to know what time you get up in the morning, what kinds of food you eat, do you exercise? Mm-hmm. They go in depth. Mm. And that's what Western medicine lacks.
Yes.
Because you go to a doctor and you have a pain, they give you a pill or an exercise and forget what's causing that. They don't, you know, they don't erase the cause. Mm-hmm. They just put a Band-Aid.
Mm-hmm. Right, so Western is more myopic. Mm-hmm. And Eastern is more like wholeness.
Yeah,
because they look at everything. Because I know they even ask about your family,
yes,
your meditation mm-hmm. practice, what kind of relationships you have, stuff yeah. like that, to kind of create a big picture.
And Ayurveda mm-hmm. also works on your mind, your mm-hmm. body, and your spirit. It's not just a body mm-hmm. Problem that you come in, pain in your stomach, for instance. It could be associated with so many things, some anxiety that you're having because of an upcoming event, or problems that you're having with a partner or with a family member. So it tries to dig into what's really causing something. So this is why it's so important and so much better for your health to dig to the root of what's going on mm-hmm. than just, you know, take a pill or...
You know, Anna Margaret, this is reminding me of, in teacher training, the sessions with the anatomist Nick Chitty, mm-hmm. because he would say, he'd have these concrete examples of how someone might come in complaining of, say, carpal tunnel. And of course, the intervention of Western medicine is to go in there
operate.
And broaden that channel and operate. And it's my mom went through it, and it was, for her, it was very painful.
Yeah.
And the recovery is very extended, you know, you know, you'd have to be on top of it for several weeks. And Nick would describe how, by interviewing the person, he would uncover that that person might be a surgeon or a painter, and that not only was that activity, that life activity, reflected in the carpal tunnel, but it was actually reflected in the whole arrangement and development of the muscles. And so rather than operating, mm-hmm. he would do a series of interventions, muscular interventions and exercises and so forth, to sort of rearrange and balance out the person's whole physicality, really.
Right, because he talked about that lady that had to push the wheelchair or something, remember? And it was mm-hmm. the way that she was holding it
yes.
that was causing the problem. So just by holding it differently and doing some mm-hmm. exercises to strengthen other muscles,
yes.
She was able to get help. Like, she couldn't believe, because mm-hmm. she'd been to so many people.
Yes.
And everybody was like, oh, you just, you know, it's a little surgery. That's right. what they always yes. say. It's a little one.
That's all they want to do is give you pills and surgery. Mm-hmm. But through Ayurveda and digging into the cause, the root, actually, of what is going on mm-hmm. is how you restore your health, because Ayurveda is all about maintaining the body disease-free mm-hmm. and longevity, so that you live longer because you are healthy.
Mm-hmm. Right. So a better quality of life.
Definitely.
Not just living longer, but in a better
so
way.
When you say body, mind, and spirit?
Yes.
Right. So I think most people can intuitively grasp the first two, because there's some reference in the West to
yes.
what those would be. What would be like a spiritual component of approaching
The
someone?
Spiritual component would be actually to blend in with actually the elements. Mm-hmm. You know, be one with your surroundings. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a belief in a certain thing, to be more in tune with it. to meditate and just allow the body to relax. Or if you have a certain yoga practice, you have japa, mm-hmm. Meditation, chanting, something that brings you together with the universe, whatever that may be. Some people feel that art, making art, is a spiritual experience.
Sure.
It's a form of expressing themselves, creating a harmonious element with what's around them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was in India and all that, and they gave me my prescription, like a little sheet and all that, it was massage, which I was very happy about.
Oh, yes.
I get a massage. But also, he gave me a chant to do, and a certain breathing exercise to do as well. So it's really just blending everything together and making me feel connected, like all those different layers.
Yeah, because like I said before, you know, everything on this earth has the five elements.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, and we just have to blend. Blending is the way that we can survive. Because if we isolate, there's no connection.
Mm-hmm.
We disconnect when we isolate.
Right.
Okay, so we're going to take a little break here as a transition, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Yogami, a podcast from Miami about yoga and stuff.
Okay, and we're back with Yogami. This is Vicente and
Anna Margaret.
And we're discussing Ayurveda generally and its relationship to yoga. Mm-hmm. And we're here with Thamer.
Hi. Thamer.
Yes.
Okay, let's make sure we get her name in there. So I want to just go back to something very, I guess, basic but important about the doshas. Okay. Right? That's kind of where we start from.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So with doshas, is someone born with a certain dosha? Can it change during your life? Like, how do the doshas work?
Okay. Like I said before, we all have all three doshas mm-hmm. in our body. There is one that predominates. Sometimes they are tridoshic, which means the three doshas. Some people are tridoshic, which means that each dosha has the same percentage. It's rare, but it does exist. Usually we have a predominant one and then a secondary one. The doshas, actually, prakriti is what we are born with, and it never changes. So if we have a predominant dosha, let's say pitta dosha, we'll always be pitta, mm-hmm. that we live and die being a pitta dosha. It's when our imbalances come into play that another dosha elevates. So let's say we are a pitta dosha, we can still have an elevated pitta, mm. or elevated vata, or elevated kapha. It all depends, and it changes. It's called prakriti. Prakriti has the three doshas, and that can change. That can change hourly, daily, weekly. Mm-hmm. It all depends on our surroundings.
So the environment can influence?
The environment can influence, most definitely. Seasons influence it, stages of life, music, food, especially mm-hmm. food.
How substantially can it influence it? Like, you can become a totally different dosha over time?
No, like I said, your predominant dosha is the same. The imbalance is what changes.
I see.
The imbalance okay. is what changes. Let's say you are a pitta dosha. Pitta doshas are fiery. They have the qualities of being hot, sharp, and penetrating. And we live in South Florida. South Florida weather is pitta weather most mm-hmm. of the time. I would say it's pitta kapha sometimes. Kapha in the summer because it's like jungly weather. Mm-hmm. It's humid and hot and
sticky.
Mm-hmm. Well, the sticky, yeah, the kapha. So let's talk about South Florida. South Florida, Pitta Dosha. Let's say you are a Pitta. So when you're living in South Florida, it's very easy for your dosha to become overheated. You know, road rage. Mm-hmm. You get in your car at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's hot, mm-hmm. you're driving, somebody cuts you off. Pitta can immediately, especially if you haven't had lunch and you're hangry. Oh wow, watch out. So living in South Florida, being a Pitta, you need to, in the Pitta season, which that's where we are right now.
Mm-hmm. So summer is Pitta season.
Summer is Pitta, yes. Summer is Pitta, Vata is autumn, okay. And late winter, early spring is Kapha. Okay. So since we're in summer, we need to pacify the Pitta. This goes for all the doshas as well, because a Vata can experience, you know, an imbalance in Pitta as well, just like a Kapha can. So we have to watch out for those indicators that we're a little too hot. So in order to pacify Pitta, there's three different flavors or tastes that we need to have, and it's sweet, bitter, and astringent. The salty, sour, what's the other one?
It'll come. Just keep on.
Pungent, of course. Those are the ones that take our Pitta off balance. So you don't want to be eating spicy tacos, mm-hmm. at noon on Miami Beach sitting outside.
Sounds like paradise.
Or having a margarita or any alcohol, because that, all those ingredients, you're, with the hot salsa.
You're wrecking our tourists in
this. They'll be feeling their Pitta.
Yeah.
Indigestion, you know, heartburn. Mm-hmm. They won't know what hit them.
Yeah.
But if you're aware of Ayurveda and the qualities, then you'll know better.
Yeah.
You know, you'll want to have maybe some cilantro sauce with your taco. Mm-hmm. Or instead of salsa, have some guacamole. So you learn through Ayurveda how to enjoy the outdoor weather, mm-hmm. enjoy the beach without getting overheated.
Got it.
And I assume this could be extended, of course, to every aspect of, say, your home, where you live.
Most definitely. Yeah. For example, a Pitta in South Florida, you have to take care of that. Other cities like Chicago, that's not really good for Vatas because it's very windy and cold. Mm-hmm. So the elements of Vata are there in that city. Mm. So if you live there and you're Vata, you have to have more grounding foods, mm-hmm. More Kapha-like foods. Mm-hmm. And a Kapha living in Seattle wouldn't be too happy, mm-hmm. because it's cold and it's, you know, foggy, and that's the elements of Kapha. Mm-hmm. So
I see.
There'll
so
be blue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So this is almost like a theory of the dispositions, but approach from this Eastern tradition.
Yes.
Wow, that's excellent.
So if I got pulled over for speeding or something in the middle of the afternoon, it's my Pitta constitution officer, and she'll understand. I can totally use this
for
in
sure.
court now.
Well,
and
you never know.
To our podcast.
There could be policemen out there that have learned a little bit of Ayurveda, and then they know why. At
yes,
3
they
o'clock,
give me some coconut yes. water. Calm me down.
They should have coconut water in their squad cars. Here, you look
I
like your
that.
Pitta is up. I don't want to give you a ticket, but
don't tase me. Just give me some coconut water.
Tasing would be very Pitta.
That would be. It's electric.
So you know, we need to add more cooling vegetables like cucumber and celery and cilantro, zucchini, spaghetti squashes to our meals in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Avoiding any red fruits. Anything red is really hot, even berries.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Tomatoes are very hot and acidic.
I don't have a problem with that. It's not coming near me.
Sour cream and yogurt, things like that. You know, they're sour, so we don't want to add sour, salty, or pungent in the summer.
Okay.
Unless you're in air conditioning and, you know.
So is that better for what season than winter or something?
Winter.
Okay.
Or even for kapha dosha. Mm-hmm. Kapha dosha needs to have pungency in their life. You know, even for exercising, kapha dosha needs more stimulation. Mm-hmm. They would do really well with Bikram hot yoga. Mm. You know,
whereas that make them sweat. And
yes.
Got it.
Whereas like a pitta, they want to do ashtanga mm-hmm. because they're, you know, they just want to do more and more and more. But ashtanga actually would be better for the kapha.
Got it.
Pitta needs to do more yoga nidra, just regular hatha yoga. Just like vata, more meditation, more yoga nidra, more relaxing forms of yoga, even tai chi, small movements.
I'm wondering if there's a correlation with the approach that maybe that many people, I think, take to asana practice, which is, you know, they might have their Sunday morning class or their once every 2 week class or whenever they can get to it class. Does Ayurveda require a much more extensive dedication? In other words, if we could say like an Ayurvedic practice, does doing a little bit of it help?
Well, in Ayurveda, they want you to have some form of routine. Mm-hmm. Routine is very important to establish stability and in the long run, you know,
yes,
the longevity.
Sure.
You know, if you have an established practice, meditation or japa practice, even 20 minutes of asana, as long as you have your routine.
Mm-hmm.
We have a dinacharya in Ayurveda, which is your daily routine, which you can incorporate an asana practice, depending on the time that you have also, before going to work, after.
Mm-hmm.
But we have this daily practice that establishes some form of commitment to yourself and to your practice.
Mm.
So again, that idea of connection.
Yes.
Of staying connected.
Yeah, and having you do something every day at the same time is also important because the doshas also have their hours during the day. For example, vata dosha is from 2 to 6 a.m. or p.m. and pitta dosha is from 10 to 2 and kapha is from 6 to 10. So also what you do with the time of day incorporates the doshas.
Hi.
The seasons also, like I said before, the stages of your life, like children, babies, up until their late teens, they're kaphic. You know, little babies always have mucus and colds, and, you know, that's just because that's the stage of their life. And, like, from 20 to 50 is when usually pitta comes in. Everyone's either attending college, getting a degree, finding a job, getting married, having a family. It's that active...
Yeah.
Metabolizing their life, basically. And then 50 plus, you move into the vata stage of life, where your skin gets dry, you're getting older, and those are the stages of life, according to the doshas, or using the doshas. So what you did when you were 30, even though you may be a pitta, once you pass 50-ish or so, you have to make little tweaks here and there.
I got them on the brink of tweaking. what are two or three like Ayurvedic things that can be in everyone's home or that should be, do you think?
What do you mean by things?
Like should everyone use ghee? Should everyone scrape their tongue? Like just one...
As people are trying to develop that sort of practice.
Like kind
of
so like basic,
a dinacharya practice?
Like a little, like a little basic Ayurveda kit. Mm-hmm. Like what would be...
Okay, well, one first simple thing is to wake before the sun does. Mm-hmm. Get up before the sun rises. Mm-hmm. You know, the energy in the air is much different.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good time that you can meditate. Everything is a little more still.
Mm-hmm.
Scraping your tongue the minute you get up. I mean, don't go around and think of breakfast. Scrape that tongue because it's full of the toxins from the previous night that have come up, you know, as your little tummy and your body cleanses yourself. So get a tongue scraper. It rids the toxins, and then it stimulates the taste buds for breakfast. Another little tip would be to drink water, room temperature or warm. Drink water with lemon juice. That stimulates your gastrointestinal tract and loosens the toxins also, and allows for moving your bowels, which is very important. Another thing is oiling the body, kind of like anointing the body. Think of your body as a temple, and the oil is like giving yourself some love, self-care. We recommend for vatas a warming oil like sesame and almond oil. Pitta, usually a cooling oil like coconut and sunflower. And for kaphas, we need something stimulating like mustard oil, flaxseed, or safflower oil. And you can heat these oils up and just anoint your body, you know, from your toes to your scalp. You know, if you have time in the morning, you massage it in your scalp and then you wash your hair. If you don't, then bypass the scalp until the weekend.
I've got my Saturday planned. So you do this before a shower or after a
shower?
Yes. Okay.
Always before. First, actually, you can scrape your body with a brush and then put the oil on. And you can go meditate for 20 minutes after you have the oil on. Just let it seep into your pores for at least 20 minutes. If you don't have too much time, 10 or 15. Then take a shower. And most important, you got to move those bowels every day, because you need to get rid of all the toxins from the foods and chemicals that we encounter during our day.
That's an important part in all medicine that we don't get to talk about very often.
Yeah, it sounds taboo, but in Ayurveda, it isn't.
That needs to be a t-shirt. Move those bowels.
Move those bowels, girl.
Snap,
should
snap.
Should hand those out at a yoga studio.
That's going to be in the window.
Yes.
Right on the scale.
Right. So let's say a person starts doing this routine with the oils and the early morning routine. What will they start typically feeling as a result of that?
Well, number one, they will start feeling a little more grounded because it's something to look forward to every day or not, you know. They have to feel like they really want to try this too, not that it's forced upon them. But they're going to get to know themselves a little bit more because they're paying more attention and becoming more aware of what's going on in their body. If you look at your tongue, it's not going to look like the same every morning. If you have tummy issues, too much acid, once you look at your tongue, you're going to see little hot spots on your tongue or too much white stuff. That's their ama. Ama is the buildup of toxins from what you've been eating. And if you have too much white on your tongue, you have too much ama. So we have to burn the ama. You can burn the ama with food, with the breathing. There's different ways. So the scraping of the tongue and getting rid of all this is very important, instead of just starting to talk and swallowing what's waste anyway. And the oiling of the body to me is like the most luxurious thing, because you get to really see what you are. You know, you oil your feet, which is so important, especially if you have trouble sleeping. Oiling your feet at night with a little lavender oil puts you right to sleep. Some people just don't realize the benefits of that. Just having a little bottle of oil next to the bed and just massaging the feet. Very important. And the lavender also stimulates sleep.
That's great to know. Are there any books or any other sources that you would recommend for people?
There are lots of books on Ayurveda.
Yeah.
I recommend any book by Dr. Vasant Lad. He is my favorite.
Yeah. Vasant
yes.
Lad.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And how about David Frawley?
David Frawley also, okay. Of course. Yeah.
And let's say people have fallen in love with you and everything that you're talking about, which they will. How could they find you?
Okay. They can call me.
Okay, so call Famer at
954-562-7200.
Say it one more time.
954-562-7200.
Awesome.
Yeah. Be glad to take any calls, any questions that you may have.
That's fantastic. We want somebody that, or I would like people to go to someone that I know and trust.
Yeah, and like I said, we go into deep questioning about your life so mm-hmm. we can resolve what's the underlying problem to whatever you're experiencing.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Okay, so we'll take a quick break and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Yogami, a podcast from Miami about yoga and stuff. Okay, and we're back with Yogami, a podcast from Miami about yoga and stuff, and we've been having a great conversation with Thamer about Ayurveda and its application to our everyday lives. And I think in closing, what we can do is maybe bring it back to even a general discussion of Ayurveda's relationship with yoga, because you mentioned like even the doshas will affect the kind of class that a person should take.
Yes, that's right.
And that just made me wonder. Actually, I'll throw this out to both of you as yoga instructors. How do you even deal with that in the context of a class, like a studio class? Maybe 20 people show up, and you notice like the class is divided in terms of dosha types. Is that something you can actually even modify for, or you just go with it?
Well,
what do you do?
You can take in consideration the time of day.
Sure.
And build it around there.
Okay.
Definitely the time of day.
Yes, and and another thing that Rod, our teacher, always says, Rod Stryker, is that like attracts like. Mm-hmm. So if you're a Pitta teacher, Pitta people are going to come to your class. If you're Kapha or Vata, those people will be more attracted to your class.
I can totally see that.
Yeah.
And also and also the time of day will attract the people, you know?
Yes,
It's
because you'll have a Pitta at like, you know, 5 in the morning.
Yes.
They will show up and be disciplined about it.
Yeah, the Kapha won't be there. The Kapha will be at your 6 or 7 p.m. class.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's restorative.
Exactly.
Or yoga nidra.
Yes, exactly.
I'm just thinking of like the substitute teacher that I've had at one point in a very distant past. And she was just way different than what that class attracted. And let's just say that around the time of the 20th sun salutation, people started to leave. Just half the room is gone.
Yeah.
I can totally see
there
that.
There might be an imbalance when most of the classes, like in child's pose, are they still holding in chaturanga for like 20 breaths?
Or also, you know, you might take a yoga class and you might just not connect with the teacher because of the teacher's dosha as well.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, I would say if you're just coming out to yoga, don't just judge your first class. You know, mm-hmm. find that teacher that you just flow with.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm just thinking, just extending that line of thought, that even the whole studio takes on, starts to reflect a particular, I don't know, would it be proper to say like a studio reflects like the energies of a dosha?
I think more of the different classes, because mm-hmm. you're always going to have different teachers.
Yeah.
You know, unless like one person is just teaching all the classes. But
or one teacher taught all the teachers.
Right. Those people are special.
Right.
And it would still be different depending on the time of day too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, your own intuitive self, in the morning you want to stretch. The mm-hmm. morning time is really a good time to have a good vigorous mm-hmm. practice. Mm-hmm. And if you're at 10 a.m. or 11 at the park on a Saturday, you don't want a fierce pitta practice.
Right.
in summer, mm-hmm. maybe on the one or two frozen
days winter
in Florida.
Days that we have
yes,
for that hour.
We come to yoga class wearing boots.
So, I wear my leg warmers.
Exactly.
Yeah, most of the population is waiting to wear those boots.
They're oh,
waiting
yeah.
for the 76 degree weather.
You just sit yeah. there and watch. Oh, okay, once it hits like 72, yeah.
they're out and musty.
So just to clarify then, what's the relationship between, say, what people mostly associate with yoga in the United States, which is a asana-centered, a pose-centered practice, and Ayurveda? Can a person, say, be a follower of Ayurveda and have that kind of practice and not at all do an asana practice and vice versa? What do you think is the relationship there?
Well, Ayurveda is part of yoga. Mm-hmm. It's one of the limbs of yoga.
Yeah.
So if they choose not to do yoga, mm-hmm. but you have to have some form of movement
mm-hmm. yeah.
to incorporate all the aspects of yoga mm-hmm. and Ayurveda.
Yeah.
They don't have to have a rigorous practice, but some form of movement. If not, there's stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's an imbalance of
kapha. Yes.
Correct. Right, because Ayurveda is called the sister science. Or
the sister,
sister
science of yoga.
Yoga. Yeah.
And kind of in closing, is there any like misconceptions, like popular misconceptions that you've tended to encounter about, say, Ayurveda among people
well,
that you'd like to sort of clear up?
It was funny because I was listening to this lecture on Ayurveda, how when the British came to India, there were hundreds of Ayurvedic schools and hospitals. And when the British came, they closed them down.
Wow.
Because they thought it was very much like superstitious and
sure.
and witchcraft, things like that. So it kind of stopped for a while there in India.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the misconceptions is, you know, they're just afraid of the unknown. But if they really look into what Ayurveda is, it's just so beautiful, and it's mm-hmm. just black and white, and if you just reading a little bit about it, you'll see that mm-hmm. it makes sense. It's just a science.
Mm-hmm. I would think building on that history of like colonialism, but also that there's mental colonialism. I think we actually started the show that way in terms of thinking about how, in some ways, narrow Western medicine is.
Yes.
Not that it isn't powerful and not that you don't need it, but that it very much limits the way you can conceive even what is disease or what's the nature of disease. I imagine that some people would even have trouble getting, say, their doctors and even people who care for them to recognize the legitimacy of something like Ayurveda.
Yeah, well, Western medicine is basically important also because when you need a quick fix, mm-hmm. if you have an infection mm-hmm. and you need something that will immediately take care of the infection, it's there.
Right.
In India or in Ayurveda, it's maintaining the balance of your life so that you don't get the disease. But once the disease is there, you have to take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when Western medicine, you know, is very important.
Yeah.
Right, because Catherine says if you're having a heart attack, you know, don't take turmeric. Like, go to the hospital.
Exactly.
Immediately to the emergency room.
Yes, yes. Or a broken bone, you're not going to wrap it up in turmeric and ghee or something
right.
and wait for the bone
and
to fix.
And put some lavender
yeah.
on your feet.
No.
It's like, go to the hospital.
And like in everything, you know, you need a little bit of sense. They call it common sense, but there's nothing common about common sense.
That's great. That is a great line, too. That is so true.
And just to remember also what Hippocrates said, that food is thy medicine. Let thy medicine be your food.
Well, that's a great point to close with.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
So thank you very much, Thamer.
Oh, it was a pleasure and exciting to be here with you guys.
Yeah, it's been a great discussion.
Yes, thank you, Thamer Azul.
That's such a great name.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
She's a great everything. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having
me.
It was
wonderful.
It was great.
And once again, you're listening to Yogami, a podcast from Miami.
about yoga and stuff, and this is our fourth episode.
Yeah.
And within just a few days, we should have this loaded onto iTunes, and it should be readily available.
Woohoo!
All right. Well, with that, we'll leave you until our next episode, which will be probably, you know, it's Miami.
It's
so
soon.
Yeah.
But
relatively soon.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.